You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 316. Today is Sunday, September 20th, 2015, and my name is Steve. I am joined by both Hamilton and Curtis. And guys, in tonight's show, we'll talk about the years both AJ and Markakis have had, Shelby Miller showing some frustration, Bethencourt's usage down the stretch, and the platoon at second base. But first, guys, in a Mark Bradley column this week, as he discussed the Braves' wretched second half, he painted a grim picture of teams not getting much better overnight, and that there is big trouble for the Braves as a result in 2016. So we spent a lot of the show last week talking about the organizational awards that had been handed out and the hope that it gave us. So how worried are you really about the team next year, Hammy?
Well, I'm worried. I don't think next year is our year, and I've said that all along. I mean, I put credence into Mark Bradley's columns. I think there's two ways that a team can get better. You can go out and spend a lot and assemble a bunch of veterans and have a chance of competing, right? The Yankees have done that. The Red Sox have sort of retooled. Or you can go the Pirates route or the Royals route, Cubs, where you just rebuild, right? You trade up for, you know, young talent, old, aging stars for young talent. And that's the path that the Braves are on. But those are long roads. And we are nowhere on the same, you know, part of the path that the Royals were on. I mean, they were ready to go 2 years ago, but this has been for Royals fans, a never-ending road to get good again. And where the Braves aren't there, right? The Pirates had indicators. The Cubs were expected to be good. I don't have expectations for the Braves to be good, so I don't see overnight success. But it doesn't worry me. I mean, am I worried about because I know that's the road we're on, and I know it's going to take a couple of years. Do I think we're going to be ready to compete in 2017? No. No, I don't.
Curtis, how do you see it?
Oh, I'm so much more lighthearted than Hamilton is. Just kidding. I mean, Bradley's article, honestly, if people have not read it, it's not he's not dumping. He can be hyperbolic sometimes. But I mean, his point is he's looking at the team and he's basically saying they're not trying to tank. You can see that they're still out there putting forth an effort, which is actually worse because they're terrible. They've basically played 242 ball over the second half of the season, which is less than winning one out of every four games. And on top of that, a lineup they trotted out there against the Blue Jays this week, the average age of the team was 30 years old. So it's not like this is a team filled with 23-year-olds. Now, granted, Nick Swisher and A.J. Pierzynski and Michael Bourne were probably in that lineup. And obviously those guys are not long-term components of any sort of
– Right. On a real team, those guys shouldn't be starting.
Sure. But
right, exactly.
His point is also that at this point in the season, we would, if we were stocked and ready to go within the next couple of years, we would have young players filling those slots and taking up time at this time of the year instead of still giving meaningful innings to players who are well past their prime. And there was actually, to kind of go to another point, there was actually another interesting article that was out this week. And it was looking at young starters with at least 15 starts whose WAR is as bad as Whistler, Folty, and Perez's are. They didn't include Bonuelos because he doesn't have 15 starts. And basically, since 1980, which is really, through Baseball Reference, the farthest back you can go with these type of ratings, your high end on a pitcher that starts at this level, which is not terrible, but it's Javi Vasquez. That you're not getting...
Steve, don't let him get away with that.
It's Steve Avery. It's Wandy Rodriguez. Those are the guys that started their careers with a WAR this low, which is basically -0.3. Mm-hmm. And this is where their careers ended up. And so that kind of scares me more because those guys are young talent that we're relying on. And the course that looks ahead for them is not so rosy. I mean, this obviously overlooks Glavin and Smoltz, players like that, because they did not get 15 starts in their rookie years. But that paints a pretty sad picture for what we can expect out of pieces that we really are relying on, not the Michael Bournes and Nick Swishers of the world. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it kind of depends on how we're going to define success next year, right? We're at 60 and 90 right now, 12 games to go. Let's say optimistically we win 6 out of the next 12. So we'd have 66 wins. I mean, are we going to be 14 games better?
No.
In 2016 and hit 80? I don't know. I mean, so look, they have to get two new bats in the offseason. They have to get a real bat for left field. They have to get a real bat for catcher.
And what kind of money do we have next year, do we think, to play with? I mean, what do you think, you know, Liberty's taking out onto the market?
Well, we have no idea if the payroll will increase. I think that they've cleared already like $15 million. Based on the best sort of estimates that are out there, that there's $15 million to play with.
Right. Uggla will be off finally.
Right. But I mean, you get two new bats, the bullpen will be markedly better. It just has to, because it was such a train wreck the second half. And the starting pitching will probably be better. I mean, Shelby won't have this ridiculous run. Tehran's had a pretty encouraging second half. Whistler, I would bet, is going to be better. You add the veteran in Minor or whomever, and then there's the fifth starter, right? I mean, Fulton is blood clot, terrible story from this morning, and hopefully it's nothing and it's just sort of a quick thing, but maybe Fulton's out of the picture and Ryan Weber is really your fifth guy, or Williams Perez, or, you know, I mean, the starting pitching, I think, will be better next year. I think it will be better. It's not going to be this dreadful, hey, it's the second game we've won in the last month. At home kind of stuff next year. I just don't think it's going to be that bad.
But I mean, is that's almost damning with praise.
Well, it's just damning with, at least I feel like we'll head in the right direction and be in better shape for, you know, the next free agent acquisition and the next year of growth for the starting pitchers as we head into 2017.
And do you really think that they're going to spend the money on a bat coming into 2016?
Yes.
Nobody's going to those games. It's a total lame duck season because it's the last year at Turner Field. I don't see that they're getting a bump, any sort of nostalgia that people are showing up to Turner Field.
I don't think there'll be a nostalgia bump, but Kurt, I don't think that they can afford, after seeing what the gate has done this year, they can't afford to be this bad.
Well, I'm sure that what they're being able to charge for commercials on their broadcast are in the toilet too, because the viewership is so far down this year. So,
right. I mean, they're not going to sign Cespedes. He wants 6 years. He wants a ton of money. I don't know who that guy is going to be. I think it will be through a trade. I think some of these pitching pieces that we have turn into the left fielder and the catcher next year. But I think that they'll be established real bats, and it will make a world of difference for the offense. I really do.
Well,
14 games. Difference?
Well, I don't know. Maybe 10 games. Maybe there's a 10 game.
You think they're primed now to be where they want to be in 2 years? No, in 2 years. 85 wins in 2 years. You think we're on the right direction? Because I don't think we have an identity now. I mean, I think by this time in the Pirates and the Royals and the Astros progression, they had developed an identity where you could sort of see, for better or for worse, this is the team they were going to be. We have no identity now.
Right. I think that if it goes as planned, then at the end of next year, you start to have an identity and you fortify it with, you know, the offseason signings after 2016. And yeah, I mean, you maybe are an 85 win team heading into 2017.
Well, Ham, the identity is when you always quote, it's the Hawks. You're right now kind of in this limbo where you have young talent that really hasn't developed and guys on the back end of their career who you just bring in to fill gaps and hope that they can be clubhouse presences. So
right now, the Braves wish they were the Hawks, man. We're the 76ers.
Well, I'm not talking about the Hawks right now. I'm talking
about two years ago, Hawks. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
All right, guys, let's move on to a little better news, which is the big surprises in the offense this year being the years that we've gotten from A.J. Pierzynski and Nick Markakis. I know we've throughout the year said, God, we don't talk about them enough. And let's take care of that this week. So let's start with A.J. His slash line this year heading into today, so it doesn't count the walk-off single, 290, 328, 409. He hasn't had this high an OPS since 2009. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's 137 points higher than last year, 100 points higher than the year before. And guys, AJ was done last year. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you remember what we talked to our buddy Kenneth, big Red Sox fan, you know, who AJ started the year with last year. And he was just like, after that signing, he was like, oh my God, what an enormous hole he has in his swing. Everyone in Red Sox Nation hates him. The clubhouse hated him. You guys will hate him. And you take that and you look at the fact that not only the offensive numbers he's put in, but he's like the heart and soul of the team this year.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's impossible.
And it's just, yeah. And I think that's the thing that may be underlooked. I mean, we can talk about on the, you know, at the plate, but handling these young pitchers and just being a clubhouse leader. Hey, I mean, he's never been asked to be that. And he's always been considered brash, sort of a rabble rouser, not a leader, but a miscreant, right? On
right.
the outside.
And, you know, famously voted most hated player by his peers in baseball, however many.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, and we were open to that because we felt like, again, the Braves lacked an identity and certainly one like that. So we thought it might be a nice spark. But I think he's really toned that down and taken on the quiet veteran leader. And I mean, obviously he has nothing to hold together, but he's sort of held the team together. And then you go to the offense. I mean, if you had to take him the preseason over under for 400 plate appearances for AJ, it would have been under, right? No way he gets this many at bats. And also the same thing for hits. I mean, if you'd said beginning of the season, AJ has 100 hits by the end of the season, you take the under, right? Wouldn't you? I mean, we were all taking the under, and he's got 110.
Oh, and if we did over under on, you know, 250 batting average, 300 OBP, we'd have gone under.
All that. But just, I mean, and
games played.
Yeah. And the thing is, and I think we could say this about Markakis as well, is neither one of those guys are supposed to carry a team, right? They're just not that guy. They're supposed to be complimentary guys. And obviously, AJ's matured and been invaluable. Markakis has as well. But they're not the guy to carry the team. And when Freeman's down or when Freeman's not being super Freeman, we don't have that guy. And it's been sort of thrust on them. And I think I think their seasons have been lost because they're sort of playing out of, you know, position or whatever. Or they're not – role. They're playing, you know, out of role on a team.
Yeah, and I didn't look at their WAR this year, but surely 3 or 4 games – more in the loss column, I would think, without their offense. I mean, they were the two steadiest offensive players between numbers and just, you know, not being injured and being there all year. I mean, it's just remarkable. You know, Markakis' slash line heading into today, 298, 371 on base, 376 slugging. Obviously, we're not going to pump up the slugging too much with his one home run. He leads the team in average. He's second only to Freddie in on base, and he had a higher batting average in on base in the second half than he did in the first half. He's gotten better.
Yeah. And he's just been so consistent. He's been better. You know, we've been horrible on the road. He's been one of our best batters on the road. You know, his splits for the season, he's better on the road. He's had to play 5 different positions a lot, and 4 of those 5, he's had a great batting average, right? When he bats 5th, that's where he's not done the best. But and he's been just consistent, you know, even though he's had, like you said, the low slugging, he's having a career year in OB top 2 or 3 career year in batting average and OBP. And he's just been asked a lot and his season is lost, right? He's not supposed to be the guy to carry his home, you know, to carry the team and just, you know, hit a bunch of homers and just be the Albert Pujols or whoever, Mike Trout. He's not that guy.
But, you know, which is why I think about next year and I think about, you know, you cross your fingers that Freddie's just healthy the whole year. Oliveira, in theory, is better. You've added the 2 new bats, which are good. And you throw Markakis into that mix. I mean, you know, we'll actually have a bit of an offense. And Markakis is going to, you know, hit 10 home runs next year on top of it.
Yeah.
I'll buy the whole full season of workout after the next surgery stuff for next year.
Yeah. But I feel like we're treading water with Markakis. Just like with the previous conversation. I mean, do you think Markakis is on like sort of a three-year trajectory where in 2017 he's primed to peak and just start bringing it all together and really contributing and upping his war? I mean, don't you think this is who he is right now?
Oh, totally. No, totally. Yeah. But it's been amazing. We were, you know, we all said the Markakis signing was 2 years too long, and that may play out. But, yeah. You know, 3 days after we said that, it gets announced he's going to have neck surgery. And my expectations were nil for this.
That's true. Absolutely.
Well, and if he's your number two batter 2 years from now, and his season is even mirrors this one, we'd do backflips for
it'd be worth the money
like that. Absolutely,
no doubt.
His WAR is 1.4, by the way, and AJ's is 1. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like he's the anti-Hayward, which is exactly what they wanted from him. There's no drama, you know. It's just consistent,
steady Eddie.
Yep,
over every month, you know, home and away.
Yeah, I mean,
first half of the season, second half.
You don't have the long lulls where he's non-existent. I mean, in fact, it's the opposite. He's had these long hitting streaks for the Braves,
right.
And you say it's lost, and it is, but it's also forgotten. I mean, it's totally overlooked how good both of these guys have played. And Markakis is obviously a much quieter person. You can just tell, but. I guarantee you that both of their words in the clubhouse carry a lot of weight around with these young players, because you see, and AJ had, you know, he started off the year and just carried us for that first month. You know, I just think that they've set a great example. Now, whether or not it's set in for any of their young teammates, I have no idea of knowing that. And I know that Jace Peterson really, really got close to Johnny Gomes. So you hope that that's what the exact point that they were trying to make with bringing these guys in, which was to have that clubhouse presence primarily, you know, secondarily was obviously this great output that they've gotten. But you hope that that stuff has really made an impact on some of these young players.
Another reason for optimism in 2016,
I'm
Kurt.
So optimistic today.
All right, guys, time for fair or foul, where I throw something out there. You agree with it fair or disagree with it foul. So, Hammy.
Yeah.
Shelby Miller seemed to show serious frustration, probably the most frustration we've seen all year following his latest loss this past week. So, fair or foul, skip a start or shut him down to save his mental state?
Well, I think at the most, you have to leave it up to him whether you do that or not at this point. I don't think you just bench him because he's struggling. I think that would make it much worse than if you did nothing. So I think it's up to him. And I think he's a competitor. I mean, I think that he wants to go out there and pitch no matter what. I think he's looking for every game. He's looking for that next game to turn it around. So I think if you were to say, Shelby, we're shutting you down for the season, it would be unfair to him. I think you'd do more damage than good. So foul.
Curtis, how about you?
There's a part of me that I think that this might not be the worst idea. I think you're right that he is kind of starting to crack a little. I'm sure that he's tired of answering the same old questions about the losing streak or the winless streak, whatever it might be. But I also don't think that it would be the best thing to have that carry over into next year. So to me, unless, like Ham says, he comes to you and says, I kind of want to shut it down for the year, which I don't know that anybody could blame him. I'm sure somebody would say he's a quitter, but I don't see it that way.
No.
But I think that you allow him to go back out there just so he can try and break this winless streak and go into 2016 without it kind of hanging over his head.
Yeah. So I saw this sentiment on Twitter and on the internet, and I was just flabbergasted by it. Kurt, honestly, if he went to the front office and said, guys, I can't stand it anymore. I just want to sit out the rest of my starts this year. I would have a huge problem with that.
Absolutely.
Have a huge problem with that.
And I can't imagine him doing that.
I can't either. No. And yeah. Believe me, this is not about Shelby. I'm sure he cannot wait to get back out there. I mean, if they follow the normal schedule, which I assume they will, have three more starts. And Kurt, like you said, he doesn't want to end the season with this streak going on.
Yeah.
My God, no one wants to get a win more.
And they owe it to him to at least give him a voice in the decision. There's no way Freddie's going to shut him down without him being totally okay with that. It would be horrible.
I agree.
Well, and he's also beyond that, I mean, he didn't have a great start the last time, but he's still pitching pretty well. I mean,
oh,
it's
totally.
Like, it's not like he's getting shelled when he's going out there and they're losing 8-0. I know he got beat the other night, but I mean, it was the freaking Blue Jays. So, you know, yeah. I mean, he's giving them as much a chance to win any of these games as Tehran or anybody else is. So it's not like you've got a better option. Why not continue to throw him out there?
Yeah.
Other than the fact that you need to lose games, stop winning games.
I know, don't sweep the Phillies.
Well, thank God we're done with the Phillies, at least the rest of the season. Yeah. All right, Curtis, so fair or foul, should they be starting Christian Bethencourt every game down the stretch to potentially up his trade value?
Well, my take at this point in the season is they need to start all these young guys. They need to go back to Bradley's article. They don't need to have any games where the average age of the starting lineup is 30. It needs to be all the young guys. It needs to be Daniel Castro. It needs to be Peterson. It needs to be Betancourt. We need to see more Todd Cunningham. We need to see more Turdoslovich, whoever. I mean, shut these guys down. I mean, and maybe I'm alone in this, but I mean, I the worst thing that can happen for the rest of the season is somebody gets a really bad injury and that carries over into next year. So as far as Betancourt goes, I'm all for him as playing as much as possible. He just had a nice week where he batted .444. So why not see more of these young guys and let them kind of finish out this season? I'm fair on that.
Hammy, what about you?
Yeah, I'm with Curtis. I have absolutely no problem with that. I mean, I would actually like, in Betancourt's case, I don't think in a 12-game sample you're gonna do anything for his trade value, right? I mean, I think you have very little to lose here because he's down right now. I mean, I think his stock is down right now with just how he's performed.
Very.
And I see AJ as a contributor to the team next year. And so I say give him a break. God, we just have rode him for so much this year. You know, as long as he's okay with it, sit AJ, start Betancourt every game. Give him all the plate appearances from here on out. I mean, what can it hurt? I think so. I'm fair.
Yeah, so Betancourt started 3 of the 6 games this week. He was picked off, was caught stealing, and had a passed ball in one of those games. He went 3 for 3,
right?
Which is
that's
bad.
Okay.
That's like his average lineup.
I know.
He went his average box score, yeah. He went 3 for 3, 1 for 3, and 0 for 3 in his 3 games. So honestly, I think, like, I get the whole we want to up his trade value. It's like the Chris Johnson thing. It's why they only started him against lefties because that was all he could hit. I think this is the right amount of exposure. I think you put him out there too much. I mean, my God, do you want the last week of the season? He has 3 pass balls and hits one fit. You know, it's not going to help anything. I don't think he's going to figure something out in these last couple weeks. So I think that this is actually probably the right amount. So I'll go foul. All right, Hammy, you agree with Freddie's recent platooning of Peterson and Castro at second, sort of staying with the theme.
Yeah, I do because I've probably since the All-Star break, I don't feel like we're playing for much, and I would rather play for position in the long term than try to win games, right? Or I'd love to win games, but not at the expense of sort of the long term stuff. And in Peterson's case, I think he's a little tired. His September, he's hit .217. He's got no power, 1 RBI. So he seems tired, and I get it. He passed 500 plate appearances for a rookie. I think that give him a break. I think also for Castro, Castro's had a great September. Let him play. Let him see what we have there. I'm fine with it. I'm fair. I agree with platooning those guys.
Curtis?
Yeah, me too. And I wouldn't even mind seeing Andrelton get some days off and see if Castro can play some shorts just to see what our other options are should, heaven forbid, something happen to Simmons. I mean, we're so reliant on his defense. He made that brilliant play the other night to
save that game. Yeah.
And it would be good to kind of get some ideas about who can potentially back him up. So I don't mind. Daniel Castro has been kind of a fun little thing here at the end of the year to watch. And sure, get him as many at-bats as you can.
I do love, as Freddie announced and there started to be articles written about the sort of soft platoon that was going to go on. Talk about damning with faint praise. Freddie's quotes about Castro were like, it doesn't have the best arm, And he's not fast and not really a lot of power, but we really like this kid. He's got a great baseball clock. Like, he knows where everything is. And it was really funny. But yeah, I mean, heading into today, since August 1st, Jace's slash line is 232, 293, 338. I mean, I agree. He's tired. Mm-hmm. It's a long season. It's his first full one. And, you know, in the three starts he's had this week, because he and Castro split it evenly, he went 0 for 3, 2 for 3, and then today was 1 for 3 with two walks. I think it's, you get to see a little bit more about what you have in Castro. I think, you know, 90%, Jace Peterson is the starting second baseman next year, but you know, it's not 100%, right? And so you see what you have in Castro.
Yeah, and this is no indication of Peterson's long-term status, you know, with the team, right? I mean, I think he's our second baseman. I don't think this is any indication of how he's performing now or that his job is up for grabs.
And if Castro's he's compelling to somebody, he might just be that final little piece that you can throw in.
That gets you the left fielder.
Yeah.
That's right.
What were you going to say, Steve?
No, I was just going to say, I think that he's most likely the starting second baseman next year, but I don't know that it's 100%. It's been a kind of grim second half.
Heard that Dan Uggla is going to be a free agent next year.
Nice.
Well, you know, it's a long off season. Give John Hart time to think.
Yeah, we got to bring the Upton brothers and Uggla back.
Good Lord, no. There'd be one fan at the game.
Oh, God, seriously.
Steve.
Yeah, it would be Steve. Steve would be the only one there.
All right, guys, next up is Shot in the Dark, our prediction for the coming week. And let's start with our listener pick for Shot in the Dark. And it was from Twitter follower Sean Murphy. And it was that the Braves bullpen would give up more runs this week than the Falcons score points today on Sunday. So let's start with the Falcons, and they scored 24 points today.
2-0, baby.
An amazing win. Goodness.
Yes.
Go Falcons.
Eat it, at least.
So the bullpen gave up only 5 runs this whole week.
Crazy.
And they had those 2 games of 3-plus innings of scoreless relief. So I'll be honest, I loved this Shot in the Dark. It was really one of my favorites. And I'm also equally as glad that it didn't come true.
Yeah, on both fronts.
Yes.
Exactly. All right, so folks, get your Shot in the Dark submitted on Twitter or Facebook before first pitch on Monday. We will pick one, we'll track it, and we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right, so guys, but before we get to our predictions for this week, let's check in on how we did last week. So, Kurt, you predicted that the Braves would give up 15 runs this week against the Blue Jays, right? Wait a minute. You predicted the Braves would give up 15 runs against the Blue Jays. And now I'm totally screwing this up. I think it was that the bullpen would give up 15 runs.
Yes. Over the week.
Over the course of the week? Okay.
I thought it was the Toronto series only.
I thought it was only the Toronto series.
It was the Toronto series.
Yeah, yeah. And they only gave up 5. So, bullpen.
I think I win just for you butchering that so badly.
No kidding.
I think you do.
I think I definitely lose.
Yes, don't even try to describe mine.
All right, so Ham, you predicted the Blue Jays would score over 25 runs in the series, and they only scored 16.
Yeah.
And I predicted that Whistler would give up fewer earned runs than Tehran or Shelby in the Toronto series. Tehran gave up 4, Miller gave up 4, Whistler also gave up 4. So the win goes to nobody. Ham and Kurt, what's that?
You're close, but all right. I'll take it.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't get that.
All right.
I mean, it's sort of a binary one, mine. So Ham and Kurt remain tied at 1, and I'm at 0 for the month of September. So big, big week coming up. Big week. All right, Curtis, what do you got this week? What are you predicting?
I'm sticking with the Daniel Castro love. I predict that he bats over 300 this week and has over 7 hits this week.
Wow.
All right. All right, Hammy, how about you?
All right, just because I think you're bored and getting a little lazy here at the end of the season, Steve, I'm going to give you a hard one to track.
Oh, good. So I can really butcher it next week?
Just what you need. Just what you need. All right, so I think that the Mets will score more runs, the same amount of runs more than the Braves score over the Marlins in that series. So the Mets will score
for a second. Yep. So you're
speaking,
saying the run
of butchering it.
Are you saying the Mets, run differential?
The run differential. The Mets will score more runs than the Braves in their series. The same number of runs that the Braves will score more than the Marlins in their series.
So the Mets will outscore the Braves the same number of runs that the Braves will outscore the Marlins.
Yes. Thank you, Kurt.
Sure.
Okay. Woo.
You should be impressed.
All right, and mine is that Shelby is finally going to get another win. It's going to be in his second start this coming week in Florida. It's where he got his first win of the season, and he's 2-0 in Miami this year.
We're a collective like 0-7 predicting that Shelby Miller will
win. As are most of our listeners.
Exactly.
It's the most common shot in the dark week after week after week.
It really is. All right, guys, let's take a look at our win-loss predictions that we made last week and look ahead to this week's games. So for this 4-2 week.
Insane.
Ham, you predicted 1-5. Nice, Hammy.
Monster.
Yeah, I know.
Kurt, you predicted 2-4. A little better than Hammy, though, and I was 3-3. But again, the Braves.
When was the last time we did a show when the Braves were on a 3-game winning streak?
Or won more games than they lost over the course
of a week. Or swept a series.
Yeah, I mean, all of those things.
Well, that was the first back-to-back wins they had since the beginning of August.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it's not been a dreadful second half for nothing.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's look at the matchups for this week's games. They're all on the road, 3 against the Mets and then 3 against the Marlins. For the Mets series, it's Miller versus Nice and his 4.31 ERA. He gave up 2 earned against us last time. Then it's Whistler versus Logan Verrett and his 2.89 ERA. He is starting in place of DeGrom, who they're giving a start off. And then finishing up with Williams Perez against Bartolo Colon in his 4.15 ERA. He gave up 2 earned runs the last time he faced us. On to Miami, it's Ryan Weber, who I'm just in love with. I put a Ryan Weber poster up on top of my Jace Peterson poster.
On top of your son's picture.
Yes.
It's photoshopped his face.
I don't let them listen to the show. Ryan Weber against Jose Fernandez in his 2.18. Next is Tehran versus Brad Hand and his 5.34. And then lastly, Shelby Miller against Justin Nicolino, who's not good with his 4.50 ERA, although, of course, he shut us out earlier in the month. 0 runs over 7 innings against the Braves. So, Hammy, what do you got? What are we going to do this week?
I think we're going to have another Jekyll and Hyde week. I think we can go 0-3 against the Mets, and then we sweep the Marlins 3-0. So 3-3 overall.
All right, Curtis?
I think if I had a porn name, it would be Logan Verrett. I am going 0-3, 1-2 for a 1-5 week. Braves, come back to earth in a big
way
on the road.
All right, I'm going 1-2 and 2-1 for a 3-3 week. We shall see. I mean, you know, the Marlins got slapped around by the Nationals this weekend. Yeah, I know. Mets need to win. You know, if the Mets lose tonight, they're up 1-0 the last time I checked, like in the 4th or 5th inning. The Marlins will have it down to 6 games with 12 to play.
And the Nationals.
Yeah, that's what I meant, the Nationals. All right, and on that butchering, that is the show.
Steep.
Make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit the problem.